Last time we asked ourselves a question, didn't we? Do we really pray? And we remember, read it again, James chapter 5, that fervent, that effective, effectual prayer for a righteous man avails much. And it did in his case, didn't it? Because that great challenge upon Mount Carmel, slightly blurry, but nevertheless, perhaps gives us an idea. The geography, there's Mount Carmel, great promontory, overlooks the sea. But had we shown you that, you wouldn't get an idea what it looked like then, because the city of Haifa lies now down at the foot of it. But the prophets of Baal, soundly defeated their God, not a God, could not make fire come down from heaven. The true God did, and that was the doom of the prophets of Baal, who were all put to death by the sword. And following that, of course, the lesson we had last time, there's Elijah praying, bowing down 7 times. The rain had not come because Elijah had prayed and it hadn't rained for 3.5 years. Elijah prays and he knows that now is the time, that this great victory here over Baal, that God will now show. Not only does he send fire from heaven, but then in answer to the prayer of his servant Elijah, he's now going to send rain from heaven. And it does rain. Doesn't look like much from there, does it? That cloud there, well, it's no bigger than a man's fist. The servant can't really see that this is going to be the thing that we're waiting for. Elijah knows it is. And from that cloud, it just escalates and escalates and the rain falls. And the drought is over. The crops again are growing. And that is prayer. And we thought about prayer. We thought about how fervent and serious and earnest he was in prayer. But this was something he really believed. He believed in God. And he believed that God could be merciful to people. And this was the moment for God to show his mercy. So, that was last time. That was our question. I don't know whether that question, whether we've kind of learnt anything from it, made any difference to us, I don't know. That's something perhaps you can tell me. So anyway, let's put that down there. And this didn't come out particularly brilliantly, but that is our heading this morning, losing perspective. Losing perspective. That great event on Mount Carmel, what a climax. What a demonstration of God's power and supremacy. And that he is above all gods, that they are nothing. They're the gods of men's minds and imaginations. Oh, and behind those are just demonic powers, but they are all under God's sovereign power. And that Elijah has been shown to be the true servant of God. Vindicated. This man who Ahab's been shaking his fist at him, wants him dead. And now he stood before the nation, if you like. And God has said, and this is my servant, you should hear him. I hear his prayers. He is the man I've got here to serve me and actually to serve you. And these lessons that he brings may at times be difficult ones, but they've got to be heard. And then, from that, suddenly it all changes, doesn't it? It all changes. And so, here's a little subheading which comes from what James was saying. Well, there he is. There's his fervent, effectual prayer. There's a righteous man, a man who loves God, who serves God. And then, the next moment, he's running for his life. He's running for his life. He leaves his servant there, and he goes off into the wilderness, and he's ready to die. Having stood so strongly, having stood so boldly, and now he's ready to die. He's throwing in the towel. A man with a nature like ours. It's telling us something there. Oh yes, prayers. What effects, what things he did in the purposes of God. And yet, well, he was still a human, frail and needy. And the fact is this, well, it's a real threat, wasn't there? It wasn't some sort of imagined threat. There is Jezebel. And she sends a messenger to him and tells him, I know what you've done to the prophets of Baal. They were my people. They were representing me. That's an affront to me. And may my gods and gods do search to me as well. May they strike me down if you're not dead by this time like tomorrow. Elijah heard that. And you might have thought, wait a minute, God is with me. God sends fire down from heaven. Who is this? Who is this poor woman, this deluded woman, this queen, but who worships Baal? What threat does she really pose? But it doesn't happen like that. Loses perspective. Suddenly, that is it. I'm dead. I'm a dead man. I've got to get out of town. I've got to become invisible. I've got to disappear. And it looks like my future has just collapsed. I can't reappear here. I'm a dead man. Jezebel, she'll have all her people looking for me, and she's wanting vengeance. What happened to the prophets of Baal? She's wanting vengeance. And so he vanishes. He thinks he vanishes, doesn't he? He's off and away into the wilderness, and that might have been it. We never hear from him again. He's gone, and he's finding his next Brook Cherith, and sort of there, kind of cowering away, hiding there, hoping nobody finds him. There's something in this, isn't there? You might hear it spoken about these days. The chilling of free speech, right? The chilling of free speech. People are always making threats, trying to intimidate Christians to get out of the way, to shut up, go away. And, well, I guess some of their threats are real. They mean it. They mean business. They don't like us. They don't like God in the end. That's their problem. They're God haters. But, well, the result can be this. The chilling of free speech. That we think, oh, I hadn't better say anything then. Because if you say something, you get into trouble. You're going to have them at you. You're going to have some Twitter war going off here. Facebook, you're going to be unfriended by everybody. We looked at that rugby player last week, didn't we? That little foray into the world of rugby. And this fellow there in Australia, well, he got disciplined on Tuesday. He got the book thrown at him. So that's that one there, though he's come out and said, well, that's that. I'm the way I believe, and I'm following that. So too bad the rugby in that thing. But for many people, I'll be quiet. I won't say anything there. No more open air preaching. No more speaking up and saying that's not right or that's not quite true. I'll just not say anything. That's where Elijah ended up with this, didn't he? That this standing for God, this standing against the Baals and the Ashtoreths and all of these gods and goddesses of the Tyrians and the Sidonians and that Jezebel's people gets me into trouble. I'm going to just get out of the way here. And it can be like that, can't it? It can be like that for us. That we feel, well, let's just say nothing. Let's just keep out of the way. Well, here it is. Believers, you know, struggle. They have fears. You perhaps got fears this morning. You believe or not a believer, you may have fears this morning. Burdens, anxieties. Mention exams, shall I? Hello? Oh dear. Right, we've got all of this coming up. All of these different things. What about my future? What if I get this wrong? What if this doesn't happen? What if that question doesn't arise in the exam? Ah, wipe out. And we can get very anxious, very, very burdened, very worried. And the fears come in and, well, we lose perspective. We lose perspective. We begin to think, I'll never remember anything. I will sit there and it'll just be brain fade or something like that. Oh, I doubt it very much, really. I don't know many that happens like that for. So that's not going to be you. Don't you be the one to think that. But it goes like that, doesn't it? And here's Elijah. He's basically come up with some conclusions. God is not there. He can't help me. He's not there for me. God cannot help me. I've got to just get out of the way. Just got to hide. Hope nobody notices me. My fears, my worries have just come in upon me. And I'm just going to have to hide it. Hide somewhere. Find the wilderness. Get out of the way. But it doesn't quite work out like that for Elijah. Because here's the fact. God is there. God can help me. So he is waiting under that broom tree, sleeping, ready to die. Ready to die. He's had enough. And an angel wakes him up. And there's some cakes baked on a fire. And there's a jug of water. Get up and eat. The angel wakes him. Elijah, get up and eat. And he does, and he falls asleep again, and the angel wakes him again. And he gets up and he eats. And then goes in the strength of that 40 days, 40 nights, and our next bit of geography, if I can find some space for it, he ends up a very famous mountain, Mount Sinai. Somewhere or other, maybe this is it, maybe it's not, but that will pass muster, I think, for us there. It gives a bit of an illustration of the kind of terrain where now Elijah has come to. And where he hides himself in a cave, and where he still thinks that it's all up. And God has spoken to him and asked him a question. Notice this. God speaks to him by his name. What are you doing here, Elijah? What are you doing here, Elijah? It's asking him a question, isn't it? What is he doing here? Because really, he should be just following through a little bit of this thinking here. He's basically saying, well, God's not there for me. He can't help me. I've got to just help myself and get out the way. That's not faith, is it? That's not trusting in God. He's got something else happening in his mind, and he's thinking, I'm not going to say anything. Well, I'm giving up on this. Being a prophet, this gets me into too much trouble. I'm going. God is asking him, by name, what's going on? Why are you here? Why are you running? And this is what God would have us to sometimes ask ourselves when suddenly the ship is collapsing, we're going down, we think this is it. We've lost perspective, we've lost something. God has disappeared from our view and everything else is coming in like this. We've lost sight of him. And God is asking us, think about that. What are you saying in your heart? Are you saying, God's not there? He's disappeared. He's vanished. He's not there to help me. Can't do anything for me. He's powerless in this one. This is Jezebel, you know. She's too big. You really can't argue with her. And so he's having to ask himself that. He hasn't asked the question sufficiently yet. Because now God begins to raise the volume. And first of all, as Elijah is there, well, there's that howling wind that up in the mountains seems to sort of break the rocks in pieces. Wow. And yet God isn't in that. Then there's an earthquake. That would fit, wouldn't it? With the character of God, a mighty God, an earthquake. No, that's not him either. Oh, and then fire coming down, some great sort of thunderstorm and lightning crashing in. And that's not him either. Until Elijah hears that still small voice. Like a voice that's actually quite gentle, quite human almost, speaking to him. And he goes to the mouth of the cave and he puts his cloak, his mantle across there because he knows he's coming into the presence of God. This, he realizes, is the voice of God. Because he knows God, actually. He does know about him. And he does know that God can help. And that God has spoken to him both by the angel and when the Lord himself speaks and said, Elijah, but it's not massive rebuke. There's not a sort of great bolt of lightning hitting him there as if to sort of wipe him out and obliterating you, failed you, wretched man. What are you doing here? It's not like that. He's speaking to him in fatherly care. Oh, there's some discipline to come. There's some new things that Elijah has got to learn. And there is Elijah. And still, he's in this kind of, I'm on my own. I'm absolutely on my own. No, wait a minute. We know he's not. And we know that there are actually other prophets that have been hidden away in that cave by Obadiah, 50 there, 50 there, kept safe and fed. And in fact, they're not the only ones. They're not the only people of God. Because Elijah would say, I'm the only one left. Just perspective. I'm the only one left. Nobody else will stand with me. Nobody else will be able to help me. I'm standing on my own in this, and it's all over, and it's all out. God gently corrects him that he's actually got 7,000 people in Israel who have not bowed down to Baal, who have not kissed him. 7,000. I'm the only one. 7,000, actually. Well, he's out by a factor there, well, 7,000, isn't he? That he's completely lost perspective. And sometimes that's the lesson God will have us to know. He has got people out there, that he might have much people in this city, like he told Paul in Corinth. Okay, there's Elijah. Well, like us all, in the end, given over to fear, suddenly panics, suddenly loses perspective, loses sight of God, is acting in a way that shows he's kind of given up on all of this, and he's heading for the wilderness. Where's he going? He doesn't know. Over and out. But God doesn't let him just disappear like that. He remembers people like us. He calls him by name. He calls us by name. And he's got help that he can bring to us, because he remembers that we've got a nature just like Elijah's. That's what James is telling us. Mighty things he did. Oh, yes. But then next moment he's running for his life. Isn't that so like us? And we can still pray to that God, and we can still find help just as Elijah did. And Elijah's going to be sent help. There's some other people. Well, he's got to anoint some kings, and that's going to be interesting. And there's another man, Elisha. God is going to raise up to be alongside him to help him not lose perspective, to realize actually God is still working and still got a future. And it's not just all dependent upon Elijah. If it's not me, if nobody else is going to do it. Sorry, no. 7,000, actually, I've got my people, and I'm raising up one man, a special person, who is going to help you, and he's going to be prophet in your place one day, so that I've got a plan and a future. It doesn't all end with you. It doesn't all depend upon you doing it and getting it right and being able to stand and all the rest of it there. So don't lose perspective. Don't lose perspective. Don't suddenly lose sight of God, as if he's not there anymore, as if he doesn't exist anymore, as if he can't do anything. He's powerless. He has no strength in his arm to be able to come and meet with you in your need or in your trouble, whatever burden that you have. Because Elijah is a lesson to us that actually God is there. And he's got a future. He's got a work. And he might have a work for you to do and work yet for me to do. We've got to wait and see on all of that. But that losing a perspective, how like us. So, well, there is somebody else who has a nature like ours. They're not quite with all of this weakness. Our Lord Jesus Christ is at the right hand of God. And he knows about these things because he was tempted like we are, yet without sin. He didn't go herring off like that into the wilderness. He didn't suddenly think, I can't speak anymore because the Pharisees and the Sadducees and these people want to kill me. But he served the purposes of God beautifully, perfectly, entirely. And he's at the right hand of God. He still has our nature as humanity. He knows something of that, what that means. And when we pray in his name, we remember all of that that he is, then he can actually send us great help. So, losing perspective. Don't let that be you. Don't let that be me. Let's trust in this great God. So we sing our final hymn, 489. Will your anchor hold? 489.